Alarms are sounding loudly. Our convention, we hear, is not focus. Various voices of concern are being heard in local churches, in academic settings, on blogs, in essays, in books, and in agencies. And perhaps one of the clearest numerical indicators of concern is a measurement of baptisms in the Southern Baptist Convention of the past half century. Now, we must acknowledge the limitations of numerical data, such as baptisms. Such measures are imprecise at best. Spiritual realities cannot be totally or accurately quantified. Still, a look at our baptisms in the Southern Baptist Convention of our recent history should indeed sound alarms. In 1950, Southern Baptist churches recorded 376,000 baptisms. 2005, the number was 371,000. A numerical decrease from 1950, despite the fact that our membership had more than doubled from just over 7 million to over 16 million. Please hear the statistical reality clearly. We are baptizing today less than we did in 1950, although we have a membership that is 130% larger than it was over a half a century ago. And I hope these statistics are not too boring. My middle son, Art, will often comment. He'll say, "Dad, where are you speaking?" And I'll give him the location. He'll say, "Dad, are you giving them statistics again?" Usually I will retort, "Yes." And he'll say, "Dad, have you ever heard yourself? You are so incredibly boring." Don't be bored by these numbers. For to some extent, these numbers represent souls saved. They represent the direction of a convention, of a denomination. They represent where we are going, or worse yet, where we are not going. 2 years ago, I wrote an article in the Southern Baptist Journal of Theology. It was entitled, "A Resurgence Not Realized: Evangelistic Effectiveness in the Southern Baptist Convention Since 1979. My thesis was straightforward. Despite the theological reformation that has taken place in our denomination, for which we give thanks to God, we have seen no measurable impact on evangelistic health since 1979. Indeed, the hopes and prayers of many was that this right theology would lead to right church practices and thus to evangelistic health. Such has not been the case. Why is the Southern Baptist Convention evangelistically apathetic in the whole? Why are the trends discouraging at best and dismal at worst? In my brief time with you, I'll attempt to answer those questions. And please hear briefly my eschatology. No, don't think I'm going to pray on you. Just think of what I'm about to say. My eschatology is this: Christ's church will prevail. We are on the winning side. His church will not fail. I am an obnoxious optimist about the church. But what about the churches in the Southern Baptist Convention? Why is it that we are taking a trend that is decidedly downward? I'll attempt to answer those questions, and some of my responses have objective research behind them, and frankly, others are more subjective and anecdotal in nature. But all the responses of mine and any erroneous conclusions are totally my responsibility. For simplicity, my analysis falls into five categories: eschatology, ecclesiology, sociology, responsibility, and humility. I will spend about 45 minutes on each item. I will be brief with the first four, and then spend a bit more time on the fifth item. Number one, eschatology. If there's an eschatological belief driving baptisms downward, it has to be the denial of a literal hell. Throughout church history, those denominations that have compromised this doctrinal truth have been the quickest to decline. The impetus for evangelism is weakened when our views are pluralistic, universalistic, or annihilistic. Surely, you say, Southern Baptists have not abandoned the doctrine of a literal hell. After all, we are inerrantists. We believe the Bible. Prior to my coming to Lifeway Christian Resources, I consulted with many churches. We asked members of those churches to complete a survey. And one of those questions asked was about their belief in a literal hell. The results were surprising. Each year, we saw a greater number of Southern Baptists and so-called conservative churches who could no longer embrace a theology that included a literal hell. Could the SBC be following mainline churches on this path? Number two, ecclesiology. On a given Sunday, only about 7 million persons attend a Southern Baptist church. We have over 16 million members. It would appear that our church rolls are filled with non-members and likely unregenerate members. While time will not allow me to delve into possible reasons for this strange ecclesiology that is uncomfortable, that is comfortable with regenerate membership, I do know this. That which is dead cannot tell another dead person how to have life. It is also curious to me that there seem to be advocates in two different camps. In one camp are those who are calling for more intentional evangelism, while in another there seems to be those who are calling for regenerate membership. Must the two be mutually exclusive? Is not intentional evangelism that results in regenerate church members the best of biblical ecclesiology? Number three, sociology. While no study has tracked the socioeconomic status of Southern Baptists since 1950, at least of which I'm aware, it does appear that we are more materially comfort. A material comfort may very well diminish evangelistic enthusiasm. The prophet Haggai declared in that little two-chapter book of the Bible, "Is it time for you yourselves to live in your panel houses while this house lies in ruins? Is it time for you to take the wood that was meant to build the house of God and to use it for your own comfort?" The prophet Haggai was talking about the Jews, the exiled Jews, who had returned to Jerusalem to build the house of God, and instead of building the house of God, they were more concerned with their own comfort, and therefore they used what had been given to them to be used of God for their own homes, their own material comfort. They were building their houses and not God's house. When my youngest son, now 22 years old, was a high school senior, he gained a reputation in football as a monster on the field. He was a middle linebacker, and he desired to hurt. On one occasion, he asked me, "Daddy, does God mind if I hurt people?" I assured him he could tackle the opponents with abandon for the glory of God. One Saturday morning, after a particularly brutal Friday evening on the football field, Jess began to walk down the steps. I greeted him. "Hey, Jess." He responded, That is interpreted from teenage age to English. "Good morning, Father. It's a great morning, and I'm glad to see you, and I love you very much." Jess made his way down to the television, turned it on, began to find himself on the sofa with his extremities going in four different directions. Much to my amazement, when I came into the room, this 6'3", approximately my height, middle linebacker, was watching HGTV. Now, for the uninitiated, that is home and garden television. While I don't necessarily know much about this cable channel, I do know that it was highly unusual to see this 6'3 middle linebacker watching HGTV. I went to the kitchen. I returned back to the family room. He was still sprawled out on the sofa. And I asked, as he continued to watch HGTV, again this question. Jess, why are you watching HGTV? With an incredulous look on his face, he responded, "Because the remote is broken." I responded in a loud voice, "Son, when I was your age, I used to walk barefoot through the shag carpet, and I would go up and change one of those three channels with my hands, get up and get moving." Sometimes do we not want to shout to the churches, to Christians, to that face in the mirror? Get up. Get moving. Have we perhaps, as Southern Baptists, become so comfortable that we are more comfortable building our own houses rather than building God's house? Number four, responsibility. In a survey we conducted, over one half of the pastors in the Southern Baptist Convention admitted that they had neither developed a relationship with a lost and unchurched person, nor had they personally witnessed to someone in the past 6 months. No one. Hear that once again. 53% said that they had had no witnessing or evangelistic relationships, senior pastors, to anyone in the past 6 months. The news does not get better. Over three-fourths of Southern Baptist laity that we surveyed confessed that they had made no intentional evangelistic efforts in the past year. Not one in a year. Apparently, evangelism is no longer the responsibility of the individual Christian. Indeed, it's often relegated into a program in which very few participate, or it's expected that the staff will shoulder that responsibility. Or it is exhorted from the pulpit, but not practiced in life. When evangelism is not my responsibility, it does not happen. When I expect others, or programs, or pastors to be the sole purveyors of the Great Commission, it simply won't happen. With apologies to Art, my middle son, bear with me a moment and follow this statistical excursion. Let's suppose that out of all the Southern Baptist churches, some 46,000, that there was no one doing evangelism in our churches but one person. Whether that person be the pastor, a staff member, or a dedicated layperson. And bear with me for a moment. Let's suppose that there was no one else with any type of evangelistic impetus. Only one person was being used of God to draw men and women unto himself. Only one. Now follow me down this path for a moment, if you will. Let's suppose that that one person and no one else saw one person come to Christ, was used of God in each church to reach one person for Christ every 2 weeks. Now go back to another statistic without trying to bore you too much. Since 1950, our baptisms for the most part have stayed under 400,000. But if we had one person and only one in every Southern Baptist church who was reaching a person for Christ once every 2 weeks, then the number of baptisms in the Southern Baptist Convention would triple to 1.2 million. That is one person reaching one every 2 weeks. But it's no one's responsibility. We need a new program, Pastor. It's your responsibility. That's what we hire you for. We need these resources and these tools. It's not my responsibility. And if it's not my responsibility, it's no one's responsibility. Number five, and allow me just to spend a little more time on this one. It is the issue of humility. had the opportunity to speak at Beeson Divinity School in their convocation several days ago, and I spoke on the topic of a more humble ministry. When I was done, Dr. Timothy George, the dean of that wonderful school, said, "Humility is one of the most difficult things to preach or talk about. Because when we begin to talk about our own humility, then we are not humble." But I do believe, ladies and gentlemen, that perhaps a great source of our evangelistic apathy resides not in a denominational bureaucracy, resides not in churches that have all kinds of problems, but I think the problem resides in me. Ultimately, evangelism is the overflowing of our relationship to Christ. We're only effective when we yield our way to the filling of the Spirit. But you know what my problem is? I am often, too often, filled with my own pride and my own will rather than being filled with the Holy Spirit. In Acts 4:8, we learn that Peter was filled with Spirit after being confronted by several adversaries. He's ultimately thrown into jail, and in this prison, he is threatened with his life, definitely threatened with further imprisonment. And they give him one chance out, speaking to his adversaries, the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin said, "You must stop talking about that name." In the 30th verse of Acts, Peter boldly declares, "We are unable to stop speaking about what we have seen and heard." That is evangelism. To be so filled with the Spirit that you cannot help but to speak about Jesus. May I address me and begin with me? Such an evangelism requires that I become dependent on the Spirit, that I exhibit a humility that lets go of self. It is ironic that my most effective evangelism takes place when I realize how ineffective I am in my own power. I know, without being too confessional, that I am a part of the problem in the Southern Baptist Convention. Why? Because I too often lack the humility which demonstrates my total dependence on God. I know that the greatest disappointments in my own ministry came when I did not manifest the fruit of the Spirit. Patience, or love, or kindness, or gentleness. Those times when I did not demonstrate humility. And my work then was fruitless, blown away like chaff, dry straw, in a hurricane-force wind. So hear this plea for a more humble ministry. Such a ministry does not mean we compromise the Word. We simply live the Word greater. It does not mean that we become soft in our theology. It means that we realize that one of the greatest theological truths is love is the greatest of these. It does not mean we never disagree. It means that we disagree with patience and kindness and gentleness. It does not mean that we fail to bring light to sin. It means that we first have an awareness of our own sin, that the splinter we are addressing may be smaller than the log in our own eyes. The failures and acrimony in evangelicalism in general, and the Southern Baptist Convention in particular, are wearying. But I know if a true evangelistic revival is to come, it must begin with God, and I must let Him begin with me. It is therefore my commitment, to seek God's power to move in the following direction: that I might become a man who spends more time in the Word, that I might become a man who spends more time in prayer, that I might become a man who seeks to serve before seeking to be served, that I might become a man who first recognizes my own sinfulness before I point to the sins of others. That I might become a man who seeks not only to know more about God, but to know God more fully and personally. That I might become a man who realizes that I do not always have the answer, that there are many wiser voices than I. That I might become a man who is more open, less judging, more caring, and more humble. That I might become a man who not only talks about the gospel, but one who faithfully shares it. When my wife Nellie Jo was diagnosed with cancer 2 years ago, I could have never expected the path that we would travel. Nellie Jo and I prepared ourselves for the surgeries, the chemotherapy, and the radiation. To some extent, my wife prepared herself for the hair loss and the sickness that the treatments brought. But we were unprepared for the emotional toll such disease brings. We could not have anticipated the side of this disease that you hear about but cannot comprehend until it happens. But now we're beginning to see how God has blessed both of us in the midst and the aftermath of this terrible time. We are more dependent on God. We are closer to God. And yes, if it can be said, we have a great humility, recognizing that we had no say in this ordeal, that it was all in the hands of an omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent God. May I and you live out the rest of our lives in this humble awareness that we are but clay in the potter's hands. May our ministries be filled with conviction and compassion, certitude and servanthood. May we repent of sins of arrogance, self-centeredness, superiority, and lovelessness. May we have a more humble ministry, and thus, according to the will of our sovereign God, see a greater harvest of souls for Him. To God be the glory.